This is the iPhone Alley Podcast, episode 19 for September 1st, 2008. Welcome to the iPhone Alley Podcast. I'm Michael Johnston, and this is the show that discusses all things iPhone. And on our panel this evening, we have Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, glad to be here. And, once again, thank you for putting up with me for yet another week.
Hey, it's my pleasure.
Oh, gosh.
All it's hug. And Bill Palmer's here, too, from iProng Magazine at iProng.com. Hey, Bill.
I'd just like to put in the request now that this episode be titled Panda Bears or Bamboo in some way.
I was thinking the same thing, and I wonder if anybody will know why besides us.
I sure hope not.
You're hoping to me because I have the recording.
I'm praying to you, and that could...
Yes. And
you
finally,
I could Twitter something right now if you'd like. It's no problem.
You can Twitter. I guess people do Twitter while I'm recording this. I always kill my Twitter, Twitterific, because I think that whenever some like fail whale comes out of Twitter, it's just going to bring down the Skype call and ruin everything. But yeah, go ahead. And finally, we have a special iPhone developer with us, August Trometer from Foggy Noggin Software. Hey, August.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Really good. I think I'm overmatched by the other guests. they're in far too good of a mood tonight.
I think it's all the caffeine. We're going to say that it's caffeine and not some other substance.
No, wait. I apparently got the wrong memo because I spent all afternoon drinking beer on my deck by the barbecue.
Well, yeah. You're allowed to. Because it's Labor Day.
So it is.
So it is.
Like, that's different from any other day.
Well.
As far as sitting on the deck and drinking beer.
I wasn't going to say anything.
I just did.
Yes,
ruined it for you.
You went there. All right. So, August, you contacted me about, checking out Loan Shark, and it's your iPhone application. Why don't you tell us about what your history is with the Mac and OS X and all of that, and then tell us what Loan Shark is all about.
Okay. Well, I've been a Mac developer for a number of years now. My very first Mac application was also the world's first podcasting application called iPodder X, way back when in the heady days of podcasting, when podcasting didn't even have a name.
Awesome. Yeah, Bill, I was like, hey, Bill, do you know who August Trometer is? And he said, oh, yeah, doesn't he have something to do with podcasting? And I said, I'm not really sure, but I guess you are. You're early in the podcasting game with iPodder X. I haven't actually used it, but.
Some people would put me in the pioneer category, but, I was just at the right place at the right time, and that was my first Mac application, and then went to do that full-time, was developing iPodder X full-time, quit my day job, and about 3 weeks after I quit my day job, Apple announced podcasting in iTunes.
Yeah.
So thanks, Apple.
Oh, man.
At which point, I was working on other software, too, and was an independent developer for a number of years, and I am now doing web development during the day, iPhone and Mac development nights and weekends. So web developer by day and superhero by night.
So did you design foggynoggin.com?
Oh, the website? Yeah.
Yes. I wanted to mention that it looks awesome. I really like the design of it. And the cool, little transitions you have on the various main... pieces of software on the main page, the little transitions where it brings out the the extra controls and all that. That's very cool.
Yeah, thank you.
Before we move on to Loan Shark, could you tell me, this is such a tangent, but I checked out Doc Dodger a long time ago, and I thought, oh, this would be so great. Does Doc Dodger work anymore?
Yes.
Okay, it does. Could you explain for those who have no idea what Doc Dodger is, could you explain what that is?
Well, there's a lot of applications out there that you just clutter up the dock. You want the application running, but you don't want the icon in the dock. Launch Bar is a good example of an application that people, you know, they want it running, but they don't want the icon in the dock. So Doc Dodger, you just drag the application into Doc Dodger, and it turns that application into a dockless application, so that the next time you launch it, it won't show up in your dock.
Cool. Yeah, I think. Go ahead.
To undo that, you just drag it right back. It's almost like a toggle.
So it's just kind of flipping a bit in the application's compiled binary, right? Or is it like a plist thing?
There's a preference file within the application bundle, and gotcha. All it's doing is just changing a little preference in there.
Well, that's cool. I tried using it on Statue by Panic Software, and it didn't work out. But then again, Statue isn't technically supposed to work on Leopard right now. But anyway, back to why you're here, iPhone stuff. You wrote an application called Loan Shark. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, Loan Shark is a general loan calculator that lets you, you know, see the interest that you're going to pay, lets you figure out what your payment's going to be at a certain interest rate, that kind of thing. It's got an amortization table, so you can actually look and see the history, what your loan is going to cost you over time. It's also got a local banks feature, so you can, if you're really serious about that loan, you know, tap the local banks. It'll show you banks in your area. A handy little app. I wrote it for myself just because I needed a loan calculator for some things that I was doing. And then I thought, well, hey, you know, this is kind of handy. Maybe I ought to release it for the world. And that's how I got its start.
Yeah, it's an awesome application. I haven't had a whole lot to use it with yet. I'm actually going to probably hand this off to another one of our guys at iPhone Alley to review. But it's... from what I've experienced with it, it's very thorough, and it has a lot of really, really good reviews on the App Store, which is kind of hard to come by because the App Store, I don't know if you've noticed this, but the App Store, as far as the reviews go, they're pretty useless because there's so many people just saying, oh, this sucks because it sucks, and, you know, I haven't even downloaded it, and, you know, it's really bad, and I'm wondering how Apple's going to try and mitigate that problem. But yeah, Loan Shark has gotten some really good reviews on the App Store even, and we're going to be reviewing that application soon on iPhone Alley. And it's $5, right?
Yeah, $4.99. And actually, I was fortunate enough that about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, Apple bumped it up to their featured apps list. So somebody in Cupertino likes it too. So
excellent.
I was very, very happy to see that.
Cool. All right. Do you guys have any questions for August on Loan Shark, or do we want to dive right into the iPhone news? That silence must mean no.
We are going so easy on you.
I'm just in awe of the fact that I'm finally getting to talk to Augustrometer, and I can't make words come out of my mouth. Sorry.
Actually, I was just sitting here going through your website and looking at the different apps. You know, as opposed to actually listening to you talk, sorry. And I'm thinking, Server Siren, how did I not know this was out there? How could I have missed this? Server Siren looks really cool.
Now, what's that?
And I know it's totally... So, all right, so I'm reading this thing, and Server Siren monitors your servers for you. So if one of them goes down, you'll know right away. And I'm looking at this, and I'm thinking, hello, that's absolutely brilliant. Why didn't I know about this before now?
How does that?
I think it was the drinking the beer on the deck thing. I think had something to do with it.
How does?
Oh, undoubtedly.
Yeah. Jeff has a problem.
That's right. It's my deck.
It's your deck. The problem. So how does Server Siren work? Because I might be interested in this too. Because of course I have a website.
You do?
It uses some of the Unix network tools to ping various websites, whatever your servers are. Mm-hmm. The nice thing about it is it doesn't have to be. It's not just HTTP. You can, you know, it's just a server somewhere with an address and a port. So I've even got people who use the application. I've got one guy who it's an AV company. So they have all these audio video rooms with all of these projectors, and they've all got IP addresses. So he uses server siren to ping the video projectors to make sure that they're up and running, which I thought was kind of an interesting use of the application, something I never really thought about.
Hmm. Could it be used for someone who runs a smaller website and they're concerned about what happens when they get a lot of traffic, say a dig or something like that, and their database takes a hit and just kind of throws up everywhere and just stops working? Would that be good for that too?
Well, if the server itself goes down, then yes.
Okay.
The way it is right now, if it responds, if the server responds at all, it is marked as up. But I'm working on the next big version of Server Siren, and it's going to take care of a lot of that stuff.
Cool. All right. Well, that's Server Siren, and you can check that out on...
Which isn't an iPhone app.
It's not an iPhone app at all, but maybe it will be one day. Probably not, because it doesn't... I assume it would have to run in the background on your Mac, right?
Right, it does.
Okay, so it may not be an iPhone application.
But I actually am trying to figure out how to make it such.
That would be very cool.
Yeah.
And you can check out all of that stuff at foggynoggin.com. And since this is the iPhone Alley podcast, we should talk about some iPhone news. So let's start off with the OpenClip thing. This is OpenClip is a framework developed by an independent third-party developer, which gives a copy and paste to third-party applications through this framework. And basically, the only thing that developers have to do ostensibly is add this framework to their application, resubmit it to the App Store as an update or whatever, and then it will have copy and paste features that it can share among other third-party applications which use this framework. And Callie Lewis actually told me about this, and she had a little demo video of how it worked, and she showed how she can hop into, I think it was Twitter. She went in there, just held, pressed down on a specific tweet for a couple seconds, and a little window came up and asked, would you like to copy the tweet or copy the entire... Well, I guess it was copy the entire tweet or copy just the text from the tweet. And so then what she could do at that point is, you know, all that information was thrown into a shared space. She could go into, I believe it was the WordPress application. I might be wrong on that one. But she went into a blogging application and held down. And the same window came back up, and it said, would you like to paste this information? She pasted it in and then went for the preview, and it actually showed, it actually copied and pasted not only just the text and the links and all of that, but also the formatting. So it had images and a table layout, and it looked just like it was in Twitter. So it's a very cool idea, and the only thing is you have to add it to your application. It's not something that, you know, you can just say, hey, well, you have to get the framework in there. And it doesn't work with any of Apple's applications right now, obviously, because you'd have to add the framework to each one of those applications. And it's the work that this came from was the Magic Pad application, which, you know, was first to feature the copy and paste stuff. The only drawback now is that looking forward into iPhone 2.1, the OpenClip, you know, copy and paste thing won't work because the way that applications are set up is that they're sandboxed on the iPhone, and so they get their own, you know, unique ID, and they're stuck in this folder, and they can't really go outside of that to access anything. So it's you know, it they kind of leave that open still in the current version of the iPhone software. But with 2.1, they're actually enforcing all of that. So you can't, you know, read and write to that quote unquote shared space. So it doesn't actually work. But right now it's available. I don't know how far they're going to be able to take it. August, because you're an iPhone developer, what do you think about the whole OpenClip thing?
Well, I think it was, I love the fact that they put this out there. I'll never use it. I'll never put it in my application. But the fact that copy and paste is such a big deal on the iPhone, the fact that it's missing is such a big deal on the iPhone, that a developer went out there and developed their own framework and released that for all developers to use, you know, that really, really says something about copy and paste and that Apple needs to get off their butt and do something about it. That said, there's a lot of things I don't like about OpenClip and how it's implemented. They're doing everything they can, and they're doing it within the rules of the SDK. But the reason it's broken in 2.1 is that there really isn't a shared space on the iPhone. So what OpenClip does is it goes in and digs around in all of your different application folders, all of those different sandboxes, to find the copy and paste stuff. That to me is a real problem. And in 2.1, Apple's kind of locked that down, and that's why it doesn't work at all in 2.1.
Gotcha. So is it just something that they had planned on enforcing all along, or is this since they saw the OpenClip thing and realized, or maybe other, you know, exploits where, you know, other applications could look in other applications' folders? Is this something that Apple planned, or is it something new that they decided to do with 2.1, or do you know?
I certainly don't know, but if I had to guess, I would say that OpenClip had nothing to do with them shutting it down in 2.1. There were probably a lot of other reasons. Number one, the applications could do that. The whole idea behind sandboxed applications is not letting one application look at any other application's data.
Right.
And when you've got a device that is so mobile, it's always connected, you really don't want any other application looking at data from other applications. I mean, because you could be transmitting anything completely transparently. You know, you don't have anything like, I can't think of the name of the application, the Little Snitch. You don't have anything like Little Snitch on the iPhone to tell you, hey, something's sending information, do you want to stop it?
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's not, I guess it's, you know, it's within the bounds of what they could do legally according to the rules of the SDK. And I don't know, I mean, even if this wasn't closed down in 2.1 and 2.1 came out tomorrow and all the developers were, you know, who wanted to do this were willing to do it, I don't think that we would see that many developers do it immediately. And I guess if they did do it, it would be more of a, you know, a call to Apple saying, look, you know, we really want this. This is something you guys need to work on immediately because everyone wants it and we're building this into our applications. And, you know, this is something that needs to be implemented in the iPhone itself at a system level. Because like I said, you know, if it doesn't work in the applications that come on the iPhone. So it wouldn't work in Safari. It wouldn't work in Notepad. And, you know, that to me is a huge deal because there are more times I think that, you know, I want to copy something out of Safari or something like that into another application than, you know, I find myself in a spot where I want to copy something out of a Twitter application or something like that. So I think that just like, you know, the jailbreaking in all of in installer.app and that sort of stuff that happened with iPhone 1.0, I think this is more, I don't know if it was planned out by the developer to be this way, probably, you know, wasn't the entire intent of it, but I think it's more of a way to get Apple's attention and say, you know, we need this now. And, you know, if you don't give it to us, we're going to get it in another way. So I think that Apple realizes it, that it's, you know, really important. I think Greg Joswiak actually acknowledged that, you know, copy and paste isn't something that they had on the top of their list, you know, for 2.0. But I don't, you know, if they were planning on waiting for iPhone 3.0 or something like that for copy and paste, they may reconsider now seeing, you know, this kind of movement toward needing copy and paste immediately.
I would agree with that. This is definitely a poke in the eye to Apple. And you know, I said that I would never use it, but don't get me wrong. This is what they're doing and what they've done with this is very ingenious. And, you know, if Apple doesn't deliver on something within the next 6 months, you might see a little take up on developers if they can figure out how to get it to work with 2.1. You know, that said, I think the reason Apple hasn't released cut and paste isn't because it wasn't on the top of their list. I think that that was just smoke. I think the real reason is they haven't figured out the right interface paradigm. You know, they're making this stuff up as they go with the iPhone, and they got so many things right with the way it works now because they spent so much time working on it and trying to figure it out and looking at different ways of doing the various things. Just, you know, the touch, the tap, the pinch, and all of that, it's natural. And I'm sure that the problem is they're trying to come up with something that's very, very natural for cut, copy, and paste.
Yeah. I mean, I think for, you know, with Windows Mobile devices and, you know, I guess the last Windows Mobile quote-unquote device that I've used was a Pocket PC, and that was years ago. But I do know that the gesture for doing something like copy and paste was holding down your stylus in an area for a couple seconds, and then it would bring up that dialogue. And obviously that sort of way of doing it wouldn't work on the iPhone, because if you're selecting text in a text field, then you're bringing up the magnification loop rather than, you know, bringing up a new dialogue. And I guess that would work for places like in Safari, where it's just a bunch of text that isn't editable. That would work pretty well if it was just a hold down. But, you know, that's what I've been really thinking about the whole copy and paste thing, is they're really working on how they're going to implement that, because they, as soon as they figure out how they want to do it, what the gesture is or whatever, they know how to do it. It's one of the most basic things. It's, you know, been in the OS forever. So it's not going to be a problem. I think that that's where the major hang-up is. It's not something that's going to take months and months of development to figure out how are we going to make the iPhone copy and paste. It's just a matter of the gesture. At least that's how I feel about it. Jeff, how do you feel about the copy and paste? Do you think it's a gesture thing, or do you think it's more of a, they really don't think it's that big of a deal?
You know, I'm thinking that Apple really thought that copy and paste wasn't going to be a big deal, and that people would just be so blown away with what the iPhone is that they wouldn't care that they couldn't copy and paste. So I look at OpenClip as not so much a way of enhancing functionality in the iPhone if you add it into your application, but more of a call to Apple saying, hey, look,
yeah,
we're developers and we want this, and all of our users really want this. We really need you to step it up a notch and bring this to us sooner as opposed to later.
Yeah. Yeah, the greatest fear I have is that they're just going to put it off until iPhone 3.0 and say, hey, look at, you know, more features in iPhone 3.0. But then again, that really wouldn't make a whole lot of sense, at least financially, because they're not charging for software, at least not yet. I don't know if the original iPhones, you know, once they're past their 2 years of, you know, supported software updates, wouldn't it become something like the nominal fee where they have to charge you just like with the iPod Touch?
You know, I'm looking forward to seeing how that plays out. And that's one of the things that I was curious about. As soon as Apple announced that they were going to do this kind of amortized way of accounting for iPhone sales, what happens when you hit that mark where someone's iPhone actually is 2 years old and they've accounted for all the revenue from that? Do you have to start paying for these updates or not? And if so, man, that's going to be quite a database that they have to keep track of to make sure that they get people accounted for at the right time in their buying cycle and all that. That just sounds like crazy talk, man. You can't do that.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they do that. Thankfully, we're pretty far from that, you know, at least another year or so. But yeah, I think that the OpenClip is going to be a really good way to push Apple into, you know, implementing copy and paste on the iPhone sooner rather than later. So I think that's the big
deal.
That's
what I'm
hoping
for.
Yeah. So it would be so nice to see, you know, copy and paste in 2.1. Just a nice little surprise, along with the notification service, which is something I'm really, really excited about still. You know, when they announced, you know, hey, in September, you're going to get the ability to do these notifications. And, well, it's September. So, you know, it seemed like it was going to be a long, long time to wait. But thankfully, that time flew by. August, have you had, I guess you have an NDA, but what do you feel about, how do you feel about the notification service that's coming to the 2.1 software? Is it going to be something, do you know, is it easy to implement in the applications?
Well, it, you know, I am under NDA, so there's a lot of things that I, you know, supposedly can't talk about. And that, to be honest, is one of them. What I can talk about is what is publicly known. Mm-hmm. And I've seen other websites publish news that the most recent version of the SDK does not have the notification functionality in it.
Yeah, I did see that. Yeah, I wonder why they would pull that out. You know, after they had seeded that with previous versions of the beta version of 2.1. I certainly hope it's not, you know, them getting ready to push out 2.1 without the notifications in there, because that would be pretty bad. But you know, if it comes down to, you know, having the push notifications and, you know, super super stability with 2.1, I would certainly go with stability you know, over having push notifications. But I certainly want push notifications soon.
Yeah, and all right, you know, the thing about push notifications is that they never gave developers, even those with the paid level of access, they never gave them sample code on how to get that notification to the phone.
Oh, interesting.
There was none of that. And from what I from some of the websites that I've read, there were certain developers who were contacted, you know, and given special access to that information, but there was never any sample code distributed that showed you how to send a notification to your phone.
So like the AOLs and the icon factories and those kind
could,
of guys
could possibly have been invited, but yeah, little schlubs like me, we didn't get that information.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to it, and hopefully it'll just be a nice little thing that you can write in there. I'm sure with Apple and how they, you know, have their SDK, it's pretty easy to add those kind of features, especially with the iPhone.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so moving on, there was this rumor posted on Mac Daily News that the iPhone would be getting disk access, along with you know, Apple would also be announcing some iTunes subscription services in September. And so the way that I guess at least the way I interpreted it, it was kind of it wasn't very drawn out. It was just, you know, bullet points of, you know, what would be announced. It would use MobileMe and the iDisk feature. So it wouldn't be plug in your iPhone with USB and then you'd have the ability to drag files on there. It'd be more of a go get a free application from the App Store, or maybe just, you know, through a software update, where it would be the iDisk application. Then you could, you know, move files back and forth from your Mac or PC to your iPhone and back and forth, and, you know, be able to read files on your phone. And part of that would be that you can read certain files like PowerPoint files and Pages files and PDFs and stuff like that, the kind that, you know, are able to be read on the iPhone right now. And I would assume that would include, you know, audio and video, hopefully. What do you, Jeff, what do you think about the whole, did you hear about this rumor?
I did, and the iDisk access thing to me makes sense. It's like a natural progression of what the iPhone is, being a computer in your pocket. So if you give people a way to access documents other than being able to email themselves something and look at an attachment, which is okay, but we need more, and that's what this would give us. So even if it's not true, I hope it's something that Apple actually is working on. As far as the subscription part of the rumor goes, I'm totally calling fakety fake on that one.
Are you?
I do not see Apple doing the subscription thing. It goes against so many of the things that Steve Jobs has been saying since day one with the iTunes Store, and I just don't see Apple doing it right now.
Well, Bill, what do you think about this?
Apple's had a strange tendency over the past couple of years to copycat some of the bad ideas of its failed competitors just out of curiosity, maybe just a little pilot program, which seems to go away from Steve's earlier policy of never doing that kind of thing if he personally thinks it could be a bad idea. That having been said, this is a product that we know Apple doesn't want. I think we've seen enough empirical evidence that the public doesn't want it. No one would really want it except the record labels, and they think, because they've thought for a decade now that they think they could turn this into a scam where they get a lot of people subscribing and then never using it because it doesn't work or because they never wanted it in the first place, and they get recurring revenue in return for nothing. Other than to placate the labels, or maybe just to, I've seen Steve do this out of defiance, let's just prove that this is a bad idea. We'll put it out there, no one will use it, we'll kill it, and we'll move on. I wouldn't put it past him. It just, boy, I mean, I'm with Jeff. It just doesn't, I can't think of a reason why it would make any sense.
Yeah, I've never been too keen on the idea of doing a subscription service. It's, you know, I kind of get that, yeah, it'd be an awesome way to sample a whole bunch of music that I wouldn't otherwise normally be able to sample just because I have to buy so much and I don't want to, you know, just spend money on sampling music and, you know, determining whether or not I like it. But, you know, at this point with iTunes and its maturity as, you know, as being a, you know, an established store, and that, you know, the way that they're doing it right now with just having really dirt cheap music, and with what they're doing with the labels as far as getting the iTunes Plus music out there that's DRM free and, you know, really, it sounds really good. I don't know if, you know, Apple would want to release something like this right now. I guess, have the other subscription services been failing, or have they been working out? Because I know that the Zune Marketplace, I believe they do a subscription service, right?
And I think all five users take advantage of it.
Can we all agree that the Zune is a failure? I mean, I could think of Rhapsody or everything that Real Player has released, every name they've used. I think they've all been not failing, but past tense failed, by my definition, with the singular exception of eMusic. What's different about them is their subscription is only independent music you've never heard of. And I guess the reason why they work is that there are some people who want to subscribe and get a bunch of random music coming in for free that they've never heard of, never would have heard of, and it's just a whole different game. No one's ever done the subscription model with the four major record labels catalogs and had it work by any measure of success.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, the only way I could see Apple doing this is, as you said, to placate the labels. That's the only reason I can see them doing this. They're not receiving pressure from anybody that's a consumer to actually provide that service. So I agree with you guys. I just don't see a good reason for them to do that.
All right. And so let's move on to another topic, the iPhone 202 update that was recently pushed out. I think that was that last week or the week before? I can't remember.
I think it was the week before.
The week before, okay. Another one of those great updates for the iPhone that really didn't do anything that we could observe.
Sorry.
But according to you know, numerous sources, it has something to do with the poor 3G reception that people have been complaining about. And I guess that there has been some information that came out as to, and I think this is officially from AT&T. I can't remember. I think it is coming from AT&T. If it isn't, anyway, the idea with the 202 update is that the iPhone 3G was supposedly using more power to requesting more power from each tower that it's getting reception from to get the 3G signal, and that, you know, doing that overloads the towers more than, you know, having a lower power signal does. I haven't really noticed anything different with my iPhone 3G. The only time that I had problems with my iPhone was when I was in Las Vegas, and, you know, it's I had it drop in and out and all of that, but so I can't really compare. Jeff, you have an iPhone 3G. Have you experienced any improvement or degradation of your 3G service since you got this update?
No change at all. Just across the board, no change. And I even went so far as to hop in the car and drive up and down I-25 in Denver. And I did this to see what type of 3G signals I was getting and if I'd hit weak places where, and then to see if it would switch to Edge, because my iPhone never switches to Edge. Mm-hmm. It will go to the bitter death on 3G,
yeah,
unless I shut it off. And what I found is that, yeah, there's no change at all in the performance. It's exactly as it was with 2.0 and 2.0.1. No change at all. But on a side note, I did find that if you're in the Denver area and if you're on the east side of I-25 between 104th and Lincoln Parkway, which is like most of the metro area, you're going to have way better reception than if you're on the west side.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah, there you go.
August, do you have an iPhone 3G?
Yes, I do.
Have you noticed have you noticed any problems with your reception, and have you seen any difference with the update?
I haven't seen anything in terms of performance change. Nothing at all. It's just pretty much exactly the same as it was before. From what I understand, that issue only affected certain people. Mm-hmm. So, I think if you were having the problem before, that's the person to ask.
Yeah.
And I don't know anybody who is having the 3G dropout problem.
Yeah, neither do I. So that's what that is.
I do think, however, that it's getting pretty irresponsible of Apple when they release updates to anything, whether it's for the iPhone or the OS, and all you get is bug fixes as the release notes. I think people need a little more transparency there as to what they're putting on their devices.
Absolutely. They've been doing that for a while with the iPhone. I don't think they've ever really gone into depth with what the problem, what kind of issues they've been fixing are. And I think they, over time, have been getting better with documenting what the changes are with OS X updates. They've gotten...
Really? Which updates are you getting then? Because the ones I'm getting say bug fixes.
No, well, yep. You have to follow a link to get to the the more verbose version of the updates.
I've seen that. It gets into a bunch of fixes the DAP and the LMNOP and stuff that goes way over my non-geek head. But do you think Apple's just embarrassed with the iPhone updates? I mean, 2.0 is possibly the worst software upgrade they've ever released in the history of the company in terms of bugginess, unusability, unhappiness across the board affecting such a wide percentage of users. If I were them, I'd be embarrassed to admit what they're fixing, because that means they're admitting that what they screwed up in the first place.
Yeah,
Apple's a very proud company when it comes to that.
Well, I think the big thing with Apple and the iPhone isn't really that they're, kind of shy about what they're fixing and all of that. I think it's more of a security type thing, as far as, they don't want these security updates, what the problem was with the what they fixed in the security update, going out, obviously, because then hackers could figure out how to reverse engineer that and then, make an exploit. But also, I think that even more so with the iPhone, they've always been so secretive, because they don't want to let any information out there. I got to wonder if it has anything to do with the hacking community out there, especially, when it comes to unlocking the iPhone, because, they have obligations to the carriers who, have the iPhone locked down to them. Obviously, AT&T, they don't want to be very verbose with, what they're fixing, especially if it, comes down to, like the baseband and the firmware and that kind of stuff, which I assume this last update, the 2.0.2, if it does have anything to do with, requesting certain amounts of power from the tower, it may very well have something to do with, the cellular parts of the phone. So, that could be stuff that they just don't want to come out, because it could potentially, give hackers a way in or something like that. But I can't imagine everything, could be that, needing of keeping it secret. Then again, we have to look at what they're doing with the SDK right now. That's still under NDA, and it's really, you know, hindering a lot of stuff. And there was a story that came out a while ago that if I read it correctly, some developers were kind of weaseling around the NDA where they were saying, you know, paying each other $1 to trade secrets or something like that. It's just,
yeah, they were subcontracting to each other for $1.
Yes.
And then they could talk about the SDK.
See, yeah, Apple's just been really, really secretive with everything regarding the iPhone ever since it's come out. So this doesn't surprise me that they don't, you know, give out anything more than just bug fixes. That, and, you know, they may just be lazy.
You know, I think Apple doesn't think that they really need to tell us certain things. And that's why we see bug fixes listed as the totality of what an update is, either for the iPhone or for one of their desktop applications.
Yeah. Well, we are told, you know, we're talking amongst ourselves, and we're being, you know, we're the major geeks, and we're the ones who follow this stuff constantly. So to us, we're thinking, hey, where's the meat to this whole thing? But, you know, with most people, they really don't care at all about, you know, what's being fixed with the iPhone. They just want to know, hey, you know, bug fixes, okay, that's good, all right, whatever. But then again, with what they're doing in OS X, where at least the ones that I have seen, they offer the link back to their page where they, you know, describe in detail what the fixes are. And I guess you can also, I mean, obviously there are so many more just people who don't care about, you know, the details of the OS and all of that with an iPhone than, you know, are geeks. And I think that's shown in, you know, people who don't even realize that there are updates to their phone. And that's why they recently put out, they sent out a free text message saying, hey, there's, you know, this 202 update is available. Go grab it, you know, by plugging in your iPhone. Have you ever heard that you can plug in your iPhone to your computer? You know, there are some people, I do personally know a couple people who do not sync their iPhones at all to their computer. They're just using it as a phone, you know, just in the same way that you would use any other phone that doesn't sync to their computer. It's, you know, it's a new thing for a lot of people. So I can definitely understand why they don't go crazy with the verbose stuff, but I would certainly like it, you know, like a link back to see what's going on.
I do have a theory. Yeah, bear with me here. I think obviously whoever screwed up 2.0 must have gotten demoted, right? If they got fired, they'd be on TV by now telling about Steve Jobs' life. But they got demoted. They probably got put in charge of writing up the summary of what's wrong with the updates. And the guy knows he's on Hot Jobs by tonight anyway. So he's just write bug fixes like, screw you, Steve. Here you go.
Oh, man.
I don't know. Really? That wasn't a joke. It was me, actually. It's a secret life I have of mine, but didn't work out too well.
So we can blame you for the 2.0?
Are you just blame me for everything.
Okay. That we do that already, so it'll work out fine. Yeah. So what should we talk about next? Have you guys seen this iPhone ad controversy about how, you know, obviously all the iPhone ads say, you know, the iPhone 3G twice as fast, half the price. In the UK, the one ad, I think, I don't remember what it's called, but the one ad where they, you know, say, you know, surf the web twice as fast, find where you are twice as fast, that kind of thing, that was banned in the UK because they said that, you know, the advertising was misleading because it's not always twice as fast. And for a lot of users who we've heard from that, you know, are having problems with their iPhone 3G and the reception and all of that, you know, they're saying that it's misleading. So that was banned in the UK, and actually Apple recently changed the UK version of that ad to from, you know, finding where you are twice as fast to finding where you are really fast. So they just changed the wording twice as fast to really fast, which I think is pretty funny. Not, you know, that they would just kind of go ahead and change it. And at least they're acknowledging that, you know, the iPhone, you know, that isn't always twice as fast, the iPhone 3G, which is good. But I wonder if they're going to be changing that in the U.S. I'm sure if no one calls them out on it, I'm sure they won't change it in the U.S. Did you see this, Jeff?
Yes, and now I'm confused. Are there actually two different ads that the UK had trouble with? Because I thought they had trouble with an ad that said that the iPhone gave you the whole internet, and they were claiming, well, no, it doesn't do Flash and it doesn't do Java, therefore it doesn't do the whole internet.
I hadn't heard about that.
Oh, well, here we go. We're both educating each other.
Breaking news.
Breaking news to each other. It's not really to the internet or anything.
You know, as long as we're educating each other, what else matters? Yeah, everyone else can catch up with us later.
Right. So I guess, was it more, it was more over the, it not being the full internet? Is that what the banning was about?
Right. Okay. Because the iPhone doesn't offer all of the technologies that people rely on a regular basis for internet websites.
Gotcha.
Because there's no Flash, no Java.
Yeah, I'm looking at another story here that does actually talk about that. And so I guess it was more than just the fact that it wasn't the full internet, you know, with Flash and all of that. I think it had, I mean, if Apple changed it to say from twice as fast to really fast, then there definitely was a problem there with that portion of it being misleading as well. So I just thought that was pretty interesting that they did that. The fact that they just changed it to really fast.
Well, here's the thing about the UK. You know, they are very, very concerned about something. If you call something something, it needs to be exactly that. A foot needs to be a foot. A meter needs to be exactly a meter. And that they even go so far in pubs. For those of you who've not in the UK, they have imperial pints marked at exactly a certain line. And if your beer isn't filled up to that line when they bring it to you, then you can ask them to fill it up. They're very, very focused on that. And I think this is just an extension of that.
That sounds, it certainly could be.
This isn't the first time Apple's had trouble with the UK. I can't remember if it was the G4 or the iMac. Something they said was a certain amount of times faster, and the UK struck it down, but they were able to keep running it in the US. And so, I mean, it ties into what you're saying, August, where, you know, Apple tries to push the limits with that, and the UK clamps down, and the US says, oh, you can brag if you want, or boast, or exaggerate, we don't care.
Yeah, you didn't give kids lead poisoning. Go ahead and keep saying that. It's fine.
Okay. Did you guys hear about the rumor with the Apple and AT&T possibly working out an iPhone tethering plan? That was really exciting to me when I heard about it, until I realized that tethering plan means that we would have to pay more.
Right. Well, that's the AT&T way.
Yeah.
AT&T's stupid, but they're not that stupid. They'll take your money.
Right. So I guess that the, you know, we had NetShare, which was a tethering application. And if you don't know what tethering is, it's just basically sharing your iPhone's internet with a computer. So you have, you know, a mobile Wi-Fi hotspot, if you will. NetShare facilitated that for you until Apple pulled that down from the App Store. And so I guess the reason that they would have pulled it down is because AT&T doesn't allow for tethering on the iPhone, and hence the need for a plan. And this is only a rumor, but I suppose it would, you know, require you to pay more for the ability to share the internet between your iPhone 3G and your computer. And I believe what's the current cost for other phones with AT&T to set up a tethering plan? Jeff, do you know?
Actually, I believe that's about $30 a month.
$30. So right. We're paying $30 a month already for our data. So we would have to pay another $30 on top of that just to, you know, get the ability to say every now and then, because, you know, who really tethers their computer that often to their iPhone or to a phone in general, right. You know, they'd have to pay twice as much for that ability.
You know what would be cool if they actually do this is if they did it the way T-Mobile always did it for me before I switched AT&T, which was when I would sign up for tethering, for a data plan with tethering, I could sign up and then cancel it as soon as I didn't need it anymore, and then I'd end up with this prorated bill for that, which is what I would do every year at Macworld.
Oh.
I would tether my Razor to my iPhone, so I'd call T-Mobile right at the beginning of January and say, hey, I need tethering, and then a couple days after I get back from Macworld, I'd call and say, okay, cancel my tethering.
Nice.
Yeah, so if they did that, I would be fine with that, because then I could sign up for tethering just at the expos when I need it and call it good.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, and you know, because you know, as far as tethering my iPhone, because last year when I went to the to Macworld, I actually bought an EVDO card from Sprint, and you know, had their EVDO service for a month so I could stream the keynote. And I'm thinking, I really don't want to do that again. I would much rather just use my iPhone as the tethering device to get me the internet. But I don't know if the upstream is fast enough on AT&T's 3G network, and I'm sure it would be flooded at Macworld. Maybe not so much in the morning, during the keynote.
But it will, with
all the Twitters and all that, probably.
Yeah, well, this last Macworld, I tried an experiment, which was to do all of my live updates from my iPhone.
Oh.
And I'm so glad that Brian Chafin was sitting beside me with his MacBook Pro with his Sprint EVDO card.
Yep.
Because AT&T totally failed, choked, and died during the keynote.
Oh,
no
wow.
No one with an iPhone was getting anything.
Well, maybe I'm going to have to go ahead and get a Sprint EVDO card again.
I think that's a wise move.
I think I will, because I really like doing the streaming thing, but yeah, that's too bad. And the AT&T service at Macworld just did not work at all the entire week. It was just terrible. And you would think that, you know, with it being a giant convention center and, you know, probably one of the biggest in that area, where lots of stuff happens with, you know, businesses and cell phones and all of that, they would have something that kind of boosts it up, and you know, they could take that kind of hit. But you know, AT&T hasn't been that good with, you know, anticipating those sort of things, and they're not very graceful as far as that goes.
You think?
Yeah. So
being openly about bringing in the cows next year, the the cellular on wheels, you know, bringing in the towers, apparently it's not Apple, it's not AT&T, it's going to fall to the expo itself to fix that problem.
Oh, really?
This is the last I heard. Paul Kent from Macworld was posting that on Twitter openly. This was a few months ago. I don't know what's changed since then, but it sounded hopeful, at least.
That'd be nice.
You know, that totally makes sense to me. I mean, it should always be up to Paul Kent and the Macworld Expo crew to pick up the slack for AT&T.
Right.
I'm going to send a direct message and tell him you said that right now.
Oh, excellent. Please do.
Okay. At least I can do.
Well, hopefully it doesn't disconnect our Skype call while you're Twittering. That's what I'm always afraid of. Oh, but yeah. So I don't know. Would any of you use a $30 tethering plan for your iPhone 3G, or is that something that you just think that's too expensive, or just not? It doesn't have enough value to it. Jeff, would you use it?
I would use it the way I described.
Okay.
The way I used the T-Mobile plan.
The prorated thing.
Because for me, it's something that I need maybe 3 weeks a year, tops.
Yeah.
And otherwise, no way. Absolutely not worth it to me, because I'm simply not going to be using the service enough to justify the expense.
Yeah. And I assume, Bill, you wouldn't use it because you don't have an iPhone 3G, and you're also in L.A., where you can steal some, you know, bad internet from anybody around the area.
You know, it's tough for me to figure out, because it seems like the instances where I would use it, places like Macworld, is where the iPhone network's going to be in just as bad a shape as the Wi-Fi.
Yeah, no kidding.
I wouldn't pull it out. I also, the battery life thing scares me. I'd have to plug my iPhone into the wall.
Right? Tethering the phone just absolutely kills the battery, because you're running a constant, you know, stream of data through the iPhone, and it has to be on and all of that. I've been able to, you know, with the jailbreak solution, I've been able to go into the phone application and actually go into the voicemail portion of it and actually set the iPhone on its face so that the screen would go off, but it was still on. But you know, that it would be interesting to see if Apple did come out with one of these tethering plans. And, you know, if they did come out with a tethering plan, they're going to have to come out with a way of actually tethering the iPhone to your computer. And I, you know, that's what this kind of discussion has always come down to, is how is Apple going to implement this in a way that's very Apple-like and very easy to do. So the only way I see this being done is through the iPhone's dock connector to a USB cable in your computer, and, you know, maybe having iTunes negotiate some sort of connection to your 3G on the iPhone. It would be interesting to see. I don't know that they would do it over the Bluetooth, because they haven't been doing anything over the Bluetooth, and I don't know if they're ever going to really develop that out and do something like A2DP and tethering. So, as far as I know, Jeff, when you used your Motorola Razr to tether, you know, when you did that, was it pretty difficult, or was it just like, hey, it works?
It actually worked really well, but I have to say it was because I used Nova Media's software that does the whole setup for you. And that made it just a total breeze to do. It asked me what service I had, and I had to put in like my, you know, set up the cell phone code thing or the Bluetooth codes, and then it was done. It just did everything for me. But the instructions that T-Mobile sent me, I mean, even I got confused looking at what T-Mobile said you had to do. It was insane.
Yeah, it didn't. I doubt it's going to be. Well, it would have to be completely easy for it to work, and that may include something like doing a desktop application. I don't know. It remains to be seen, and I don't know if I would ever pay for it. I have NetShare, actually, so I wouldn't pay for it either way. But although I did have a, I actually, and this is weird, I had a nightmare last night that, you know, I looked at my iPhone and it had this giant notice on there that it wasn't a normal just like little blue bubble. It was this really crazy bubble with, you know, red outline and all of that. It said, you know, to all customers doing this, we know what you're doing and we're not allowing you to do it anymore. As far as the tethering goes. So I was very sad when I saw that. And, you know, when I woke up and I looked at my iPhone and I was clutching it with a cold sweat, and I realized that it wasn't true. So
people can help.
I laughed at your pain. I'm sorry.
Oh man. Having dreams about the iPhone. That's bad.
That's pretty hardcore, dude.
Yeah, I, you know, I don't want to be that hardcore. I wish I didn't dream about the iPhone, unless it was, you know, dreaming, you know, nice things about my iPhone, you know, frolicking in fields and all of that.
I dream that my iPhone went back to working properly.
Nice. Did I get?
Oh, I like that dream.
Did I tell you guys about my idea for the next for Macworld coming around? I'm thinking about having a giant. A plushy iPhone, you know, like just like a character that would walk around the floor of Macworld, and it would just be, you know, an iPhone that you can hug, you know, just free iPhone hugs courtesy of iPhone Alley. Do you think that would go over well?
That is awesome.
I don't know. I think everybody but Apple would really like it.
Don't worry about Apple. Just get clearance from the people running the Expo and the people who run Moscone.
Do you think that? I guess they don't have really any say over that kind
of
thing.
Stay out of the Apple booth, yes.
Yeah, stay out of the Apple booth, because that's their space.
Yeah, stay out of the Apple booth.
Go in there and then run really fast.
If you're going to do something at the Apple booth, you have to do it very quick and sort of confuse them into agreeing with you. Like last year when I convinced them to let me take in two rock stars and shoot a photo shoot with Apple TV in the background, I just kept thinking, please let this happen before someone with some authority walks over and shuts it down. So you just got to do it really fast is all.
Well, I don't think
I don't want to say no.
I don't think the confusion part would be very difficult with a giant plushy iPhone walking through the Apple booth.
Tell him Steve Jobs is inside of the costume.
Yes, it's really Steve Jobs. This is how he goes around in public. It's his disguise.
That's a great way to stay incognito.
Yeah, no one would really call that to attention.
They'll no longer be worried about his physical health. They'll just worry about his mental health. It's a great smoke screen.
Exactly.
All Mom, right. I just saw Steve Jobs. No, it's not Steve Jobs. It's some idiot wearing a phone.
Yes. Oh man. The only thing I have to
dressed as a phone.
The only thing I have to think about is you know, how we would actually, you know, say that it's an iPhone Alley thing. I guess we could either have the site loaded up on the screen, or just kind of in very small text, just says free hugs courtesy of iPhone Alley, and that would be it. I think that'd be good. I mean, I gotta say that last year I was really more into the idea of hugging my iPhone than I am now, because it's so buggy and it really makes me want to throw it out the window a lot of times. But
so, I mean, I think you could, if let's say Apple doesn't fix 2.0 by then, I'm gonna do a competing one that says feel free to punch your iPhone. And you're gonna wear the costume. Just, well, you hate, tired of the bugs? Punch this iPhone.
Is Jeff gonna wear that costume?
I thought you were gonna wear it.
Oh no, I wanna do the one with the hugging. I don't like to be beat up.
We'll see which of the two gets more hug this iPhone or punch that one.
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking putting me in the punching suit would be bad because no one wants to see me cry.
That's true. We don't want to see Jeff cry. We want to see Jeff in the hugging iPhone suit. And what the heck are we talking about? This is ridiculous.
Oh, is the show still going?
Yeah.
Oh, wait. You're recording this.
Yes, I am. This is going on to the internet. All right, let's talk about one last thing before we get to our iPhone picks. This was pretty big news, the iPhone security flaw. And basically, the way that this works, it affects everyone, and it's not something like, hey, you have to be some elite hacksaw to, you know, be able to take advantage of this exploit. For anyone who has a passcode lock on their iPhone, where it's, you know, type in these four digits and then unlock your phone, at the point of slide to unlock to, you know, get to everything. If you have your iPhone set up to where you double click the home button, it brings you to your contacts. It will actually, if you go, you're at the point of, okay, slide to unlock, and you have the part where it asks for the password. The iPhone, you know, just like, I think it's mandatory that you're always allowed to make an emergency call. So you hit the emergency call button, and if you double click the home button, you'll get to your favorites. And at that point, you know, if you have any favorites, it would have to, you know, it only works if you actually have favorites. But at that point, you hit the little blue arrow next to one of your favorites, and, you know, if they have, if you've put their address in there, if you put their email address in there, if you put a website or anything like that in there, they can tap on that. It'll bring them to, you know, the Maps application, for example. And at that point, you have basically full access to the contacts, Safari, and all of that. You know, address, not address book, that's contacts, the calendar,
mail,
everything. So it's a huge, huge security flaw just because it's so easy to take advantage of. And really, there's no fix for it yet, except, you know, from Apple. The thing that they're telling everyone to do is turn off the whole, you know, extremely handy double click to get to your favorites shortcut. And if you can live without that, then, you know, go right ahead. But for me, that's one of the huge improvements that came along with one of the earlier updates, is the ability to get to your contacts, you know, right away, regardless of where you are. An Apple representative talked to Macworld about this problem, and she did say that a fix will be coming soon, sometime this month in September, with a fix for that. But right now it's a huge hole in the security. I don't actually use security passcode. Jeff, do you use a lock on your phone?
I do. I've always done that even before I had an iPhone. And I tested the thing out, and it totally works. Double tap the home button.
Yep.
And I was able to get to my favorites, and then from there to get to Safari and to mail. And I thought, wow, that kind of sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be really easy to just, depends on what the hacker or, you know, offender is really after. If they're after your phone number, they can certainly get to that. If they, you know, want one of your contacts, they can get to that. If they, you know, they can really just do anything with all the really important information on your iPhone. Am I the only one who doesn't lock the phone? Bill, do you lock your phone?
only when I'm traveling to conventions where people like you guys would know enough to go after my phone.
Right.
Smart. Very smart.
August, do you lock your phone?
No, I do not.
And why not?
It's just way too inconvenient.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I don't, you know, I know people who do the whole, every time you boot up your Mac, you have to type in a password to log in and, you know, screensaver password and all of that. And really, that's just way too inconvenient for me. I would much rather trust everyone I'm around. And, you know, there was a tip that I heard about where it's really cool. If you have a Mac and you go into the keychain access application that's in the utilities folder, you can actually from, I think it's in the preferences for keychain access, you can actually check a box and it will put a little padlock in your menu bar where you can just say lock screen and it will bring you, you know, normally if your screensaver would just come up and it wouldn't be a problem, you could wiggle the mouse and get back to work. This would actually bring up the screensaver in a state where it's locked. So if you're thinking, okay, I want to walk away from my computer for 2 minutes and I think that someone might want to, you know, snoop around, you can just hit that. But otherwise, I don't lock my stuff down. And I know that's, you know, it's kind of a big deal for, you know, you can say that there's not a lot of stuff on there that I really care about as far as, you know, people getting access to. But then again, there's also, you have to keep in mind, you know, you have other people's contact information in there as well. And you have to think about whether or not, you know, they want their information going out there too. So, you know, I guess I don't care as much about that. I may lock my phone if I go to a convention, but then again, my phone is always on me. So, but yeah, this is a huge security flaw, and I'm surprised that it's still in there, because Apple, I think, really went after this kind of goofy flaw where if you slide the thing and then you hit the button and then you hit it, you hit the other button three times and then you go into Safari and you create a bookmark and then you hit that bookmark and you go back to your contacts and all that. That was actually a way of, you know, not obviously not that exact process, but hackers were using that to jailbreak and unlock phones earlier on. Which was very clever. And I think that, you know, you would have thought that Apple would have closed down all of those little holes. And I guess it only works if you have an activated phone, of course. So it's not really a good way for hackers to get in there. But it's very similar. So the fix is coming, hopefully along with a lot of, you know, other big stability improvements in 2.1. I'm assuming it's coming in 2.1. That's why it's coming in September. And again, I'm making the assumption
It seems to me to be such an easy fix that I don't know why it wouldn't be in the September update.
Right. And we're all assuming that 2.1 is coming in September. Has there been any other indication that... What?
Are you sure this is an intentional on Apple's part? It reminds me of, like, Super Mario Brothers, up, up, down, down, left, left, right, right, A, B, A, B, start, and you get infinite lives on Super Mario Brothers.
Getting infinite lives on your iPhone.
Stuff on, but it's like, let's give us some free games. Find your way around hacking the iPhones. Hacking for beginners.
Yeah, I have to say, I like having the ability to do that, but, you know, it needs to be fixed. I don't know what I would really be getting at with someone else's phone, because I don't usually snoop around other people's phones and computers and stuff, but, you know, it's kind of a, you know, with the internet, this kind of stuff gets around pretty quickly, so it's not very secret now. So it's not like you're going to go up to someone's phone. Like, I'm not going to go up to Jeff's phone and start getting at his stuff and say, hey, look at me. I have, you know, access to all your stuff. How did you do that? And it's not going to be that cool because Jeff already knows about it.
Right. And, you know, and then when I sock you in the eye, then it gets really uncool.
Yeah, that's not cool. So let's move on to our iPhone picks. We should wrap this up so we don't, you know, I think I need some food, and that's playing into my loopiness, and I'm not even going to try and read into why, you know, Jeff and Bill are, you know, crazy. I think that's just how they are. And that's why, you know, that's why I get you guys on here, because you add a certain element of craziness to the show, and it really works well.
So we make you look
just loose cannons, man.
Loose cannons. That's a good way to describe it.
I just feel privileged that I wasn't categorized as the crazy guy.
You're the developer guy. Okay. Jeff, do you want to start with your iPhone pick?
Sure. And my iPhone Pick is not an application. It's not a hardware attachment for the iPhone. And it's not even a case. It's a website.
Okay.
Have you heard of Tweet Clouds?
I think I have. Is that where it brings up a giant cluster of different words that you use on Twitter?
Yes.
Okay. And
it's tweetclouds.com.
All right.
And I find it to be very cool. You can put in your own tweet account or someone else's and just see what types of words are showing up all the time. And I find it very interesting.
I find it's kind of sad that, you know, my vocabulary on Twitter is limited to really simple adjectives, and those kind of show up as, you know, as the largest words on the tweet cloud. So I'm not that impressed by it. That and the fact that iPhone constantly shows up, I feel like, yeah, I am kind of that guy. I mean, I am but I don't want to be that guy.
my list is very different because it includes words like hungry and goopy and crap.
Okay, so is there an iPhone specific for version of that site, or is it just?
Oh, not that I know of. I've never looked.
Oh, okay. So this is your.
I've always just done this from my desktop.
Okay, so it's just a general pick.
Right. And okay. If you think that one's lame, I could give you something else. Actually, I do want to give you another one.
Okay. It's tweetclouds.com, right? It was the URL for the other one? Tweetclouds is
tweetclouds.com.
Okay.
Right. All right, so this is actually an iPhone application. It's called Seismometer. And it uses the accelerometer that's built into the iPhone or the iPod Touch, and it does like one of those little graphs that you get like from an earthquake.
Ooh, that's cool.
And yeah, so it has just a little needle that moves back and forth across the screen and draws up the little zigzaggy line, and the more you shake your iPhone, the bigger the lines get. So this is just a silly, fun little thing.
So it's a good way to easily throw your iPhone across the room.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Just, there are so many applications out there that just make it so easy for you to have fun while you're destroying your phone. Like Phone Saver?
I know. Yeah, Phone Saver is great. I have yet to watch two people smack their iPhones together with that, though.
Oh, I've done it. I've had Phone Saver duels in AT&T stores. Am I alone here in that?
Ava!
Okay. And
that was a bloody ass.
How much is the seismometer app?
It's free.
It is free. Cool. All right, Bill, what is your iPhone pick?
My pick this week is a podcast, or more accurately, two of them, just to be diplomatic. I TiVo everything on TV, hardly ever download stuff, television content from iTunes, so I don't want to pay for it, but you know, I had a very busy week last week. The convention, the political convention that was on, I missed most of it. Very busy week this week. I'm going to probably miss this one as well. Both conventions are available for download in iTunes. This is nothing new, but I think we don't think of them as being there because you don't think of television as being podcasted.
Right.
And they have the full video. So you can download, you know, whoever spoke, either party, download the whole video file. And it's, you know, it's a half a gigabyte to get a 45-minute speech. But you can watch it on your screen just like this television. It's very hard to TiVo because CNN didn't seem to have the right times, or the speeches came on, they were delayed, and even the stuff I tried to record wasn't what I wanted. So I think for everyone, you know, for one party or the other, if you have interest in that stuff, it's there, it's free, and it's on the front page of the iTunes podcast thing.
Okay, and is there anything that we can search for if it doesn't happen to be on the front page?
I imagine you just go into podcasts and search for Democrat or Republican or whatever your candidate's name is, but they got big, huge icons. For some reason, the Republican is on the left side of the page and the Democrat's on the right side of the page. I think everyone would agree they got that one backwards. But they're right there, the number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 podcasts for all the
cool
political feeds.
All right. August, what is your iPhone pick?
This is actually more of a mobile phone pick. It's really done for mobile phones, but obviously you can use it with your iPhone as well. But DirecTV has a mobile website for phones that allow you to send your DirecTV unit a record message, so that if you're out and about, you remember that you need to record something, you go to the DirecTV website. It's m.directtv.com. Search for the show, hit record, it sends that back to your home, and it starts recording instantly. It's actually very, very cool and very handy if you're television obsessed.
Yeah, that is really cool. And I wonder if there's an iPhone application that's either in development or, you know, possibly out there. Have you looked for a DirecTV application? And
I have, and there isn't.
Okay. I think that'd be a cool application to have for the iPhone. Then again, there would probably have to be some sort of API for them to plug into for that to work. But, you know, I assume the web page is pretty easy to bring up on your phone because it's a mobile version of the site anyway. So it's very cool.
Right.
m.directtv.com.
Yes.
Cool. And my iPhone pick is specifically for the iPhone, although I guess it'll work for work on iPods and all of that, anything with a dock connector. It is the Altec Lansing T612. It is a speaker dock, and it works with the iPhone, and it's pretty great. I had a chance to take a look at it for a while, and I played with it, and you know, really put it through some rigorous testing, and compared it to a bunch of other speaker docks, and it's $200, and it sounds really good. The sound is very loud. It's very big and it'll fill a room easily, and it's also it's pretty well balanced as well. And the only thing is, it has a little bit of it has a slight issue with bass distortion. If a song is really really bassy, you'll get some distortion. But thankfully, it does have the ability to tweak treble and bass both from the unit itself and from the remote. So. Aside from that, it sounds phenomenal, and it's one of my favorite iPhone speaker docks that are available right now. Like I said, it works with not only just the iPhone because it, you know, it's completely shielded, so you don't have to put it into airplane mode. You'll actually get calls. You know, if you get a call and it's in the dock, you'll get a call and it'll be fine. You won't hear that crazy GSM noise in your speaker. The only other problem I had with it was that the remote wasn't that great. The reception on the remote wasn't good. It wasn't, you know, I'm really used to the Apple remotes, which you can just kind of point in the opposite direction of the unit that you're trying to, you know, control, and it works fine. So you have to point it, you know, very, very directed at the front of the speaker dock. But otherwise, it works great. And we have a review up on iPhone Alley right now, so iPhoneAlley.com/reviews, and you can check that out. So that's the Altec Lansing T612, and it is $200. So that is my iPhone pick. And so I guess that you know, wraps up the most of the show. I should talk about that our bandwidth is provided by CashFly at CashFly.com, and don't forget to check out the website, iPhoneAlley.com. It's the place to get more iPhone news, tips, and reviews. And if you have a tip you'd like to share, or an application or product you'd like us to review, please let us know by using the contact link on the left-hand side of the page. And you can find show notes for the podcast at iPhoneAlley.com/podcast. And you can send feedback to podcast@iPhoneAlley.com. And once again, joining us from the Mac Observer and iPod Observer, Jeff Gamet is here. Thank you, Jeff, for being here.
Sure. As always, it was an incredible ride and a lot of fun.
Yes. And you can also find Jeff on Twitter at twitter.com/jgamet. And Bill Palmer from iProng Magazine at iProng.com, and of course on Twitter at twitter.com/BillPalmer. Great having you, Bill.
So long, and thanks for all the bamboo.
And, of course, August Trometer from Foggy Noggin Software at foggynoggin.com. Thank you so much for being here and, you know, talking about the iPhone.
Thanks for having me, and it's just nice to be among such esteemed company.
And thank you.
Don't get out much, do you?
Did you say steamed company?
Like vegetables. Do you have a Twitter, August?
Yes, it's August.
Awesome. So twitter.com/August. And my Twitter is twitter.com/MichaelJohnston. So if you want to stalk me, you can. That works out too. And so that's all for us. Another episode of the iPhone LA podcast is out the door.
An iPod. It's a panda bear. They don't know how to talk into the microphone. An iPod.
Yeah. What do panda bears sound like anyway? They sound like
that.
Really? They're so cuddly.
How are we going to communicate this? Roar! We don't want to carry around a mouse, right?
Yeah, you got the higher voice.
I'm recording it, by the way. Recording, so.
I hope you were recording that.
Oh, I was.
Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No.
Made up.
What did I walk into the middle of?
Bill was growling like a panda bear.